So we're going to first say is, let's get rid of the assumption genes control life with a simple observation that we already talked about. Remove the genes from a cell, the cell still has life. Something else is controlling the cell. We mentioned the fact that it was the membrane that was controlling the cell, the skin of the cell. I said that the skin was the primary organelle in biological history. It was the first organelle. And what was interesting about it is, while it looked just like saran wrap, we didn't understand the completely elegant organization of its structure. Because as I alluded to before, I saw that that structure represented a computer chip. And it's interesting because if you look at a computer chip, you'd think, well, what is that? There's just that little black carbony looking thing on a flat piece of metal. And you say, what is that? And it's like the intelligence is in there. Well, this is what we're beginning to find out about the cell membrane. It is the chip. So to understand how it works, we're going to have to start talking about the biology. But the first things I said, get rid of the idea that genes control life, because life goes on in the absence of genes. So now let's get down to the fundamental. How does life work? So we start with the fact that we have cells. Cells are living organisms. Cells are made out of protein building blocks. There's over 100,000 different kinds of proteins. The proteins are molecules with very complex shapes. They're almost like gears that engage with each other. So that when you look at a protein, you see a three-dimensional structure that can plug into another protein, like a lock and key or geared interactions, and that there are different kinds of groupings of gears. Some of these protein gears, when they work, create respiration. Some of these protein gears, when they're assembled and they work, provide for digestion. Some other protein gears, when they interact and assemble with each other, provide for muscle contraction. Other protein gears come together and create excretory behaviors. All of the functions of the cells are due to protein gears. So if I take the cell apart, what you're going to find is 100,000 different kinds of gears all assembled in this very complex machinery. The gears are, again, each one is unique. Each one has its own shape and structure. The blueprints for the gears are the genes, so that when I need to make gears for my cell, I have to go get the blueprint from the DNA, copy the blueprint, which is called RNA, and then use that RNA blueprint to build the proteins. So inside my cell, it's a vast complex machine of all different shaped gears engaging with each other in different assemblies, providing for different functions. The assemblies of gears in biology are called pathways. And so when I say a digestive pathway, what I'm referring to is a group of protein gears that, when they function, provide for digestion. If I said respiratory pathway, that would mean a group of protein gears that, when assembled and coordinated and moving, the gears provide for respiration. So if I said excretory pathway, and I say to you, so what's an excretory pathway? Well, at least from this point, you should say it's a process of excretion carried out by a group of gears that, when they assemble together and move, result in the action of excretion. So basically, I can look at all of the human characteristics of the machinery part, all the physiological characters of a human body, and identify them as gears that are engaging with each other, and through that interaction, provide for the movements, and the movements are the character of life. The movements are physiology. So a bunch of gears that don't move might be a cadaver. A dead person has lots of gears in them, but they're not moving and there's no function. So all of a sudden it says, okay, we can get the idea that there are gears that are providing for these functions. And we also said that the gears have to move in order for the function to become engaged and activated. And so then I say, okay, well then life is actually the gears and the gears moving. And so that's, well, wait, that's two different things. There are the gears and there's something that causes the gears to move. At this time, we should have like a big drum roll and a fanfare, because at this point, I'm going to try to now tell you about what is the secret of life. The secret of life is movement. that without movement, there is no life. And in fact, animation is a character that distinguishes living things from non-living things. So the issue is, well, what is movement? Well, it's proteins changing shape. Well, how does that come about? Okay, so now we're going to do a little discourse about what a protein is, how it acquires a shape, and then the secret of life, how it changes the shape, and in the process of changing shape generates movement, and that movement is then harnessed to do the biological, physiological functions that we describe as life. So the first thing we must do is, let's take a look at the structure of a protein. Interesting, because over 100,000 different proteins, but here's a given fact. All proteins are like strings of poppet beads. All of them are linear strings of poppet beads. Each different protein has a different length, but they're all strings of poppet beads. The poppet beads that make up these chains called peptides or proteins are actually subunits of the chain. The poppet beads are called amino acids. There are 20 different kinds of amino acids that are found in the human body. So when you go to the health food store and you see amino acids on the shelf, what you're looking at are the little subunits that get strung together as poppet beads and create the proteins. As I said, there are 20 different kinds of amino acids. What makes them different is their shape. Each one of them has slight variations in a shape. So when I plug a bunch of them together in a sequence, the overall shape of the string is really a reflection of the collection of the individual shapes of the little beads that are connected to each other, making this poppet bead chain. So the result is this. By putting a different sequence of amino acids together in a chain, I can get a unique shape. If I change the amino acid sequence, I change the shape of the string. So in a sense, it's very hard to visualize, but try to think about it this way. A single string can be considered like a piece of yarn. That with yarn, you can fold it, twist it, and knot it in a process called knitting and create a sweater from one piece of string, which has a very unique shape. But I could also use a piece of string and a different pattern of folding and knotting and tying, I could create a sock. With another piece of string with a different pattern of folding and knotting, I could create a cap. Or, one that always was humorous to me, you could take a piece of knitting yarn, tie it and knot it in a specific way and form what is called a tea cozy, whatever that is. And the relevance about this is what? A string, while itself doesn't have any shape, when folded and knotted, can provide for all kinds of three-dimensional things, sweaters, socks, caps, tea cozies. The relevance about proteins are linear strings like yarn. But here's the secret. The sequence of amino acids are like built-in knitting instructions that tell the yarn how to fold up to form a specific structure. So it's like self-knitting yarn. When you assemble the amino acids into a chain, you get a piece of yarn, and then when you let it go, the yarn will automatically knit itself into a structure based on the sequence of amino acids. The point, every protein in the body is a linear piece of protein yarn and is folded into patterns that are determined by the sequence of the amino acids, which are like a blueprint telling how this piece of yarn is going to fold. Okay, now I have 100,000 different parts. Each protein is different because each protein has a unique length and a unique sequence of amino acids, which will determine how to fold that piece of yarn into a shape. Okay, so now we have all the parts. We have a human body made out of all these parts. You can see all the organization, the fingers, the toes, the knees, the feet, everything. These are proteins assembled into this structure, and the proteins form the cells, and the cells assemble in a higher order of the human body. Okay, now I have the parts. But the parts alone, if they don't move, don't provide life. So that's why a dead body is a cadaver, but it has all of the physical characters and attributes of a live person, but the fact is it's not moving. So then all of a sudden you say, well, then what's the secret of life? And the answer is, it's not the proteins alone. The proteins provide for the structure. The question is, what causes the structure to move? That's the secret of life. And here's what it is. The proteins, when they form and wrap themselves up into their final shape, frequently have little places on there, like little pockets or little troughs or little charged areas where other kinds of chemicals can bind signals. They can bind like a lock and a key. So a protein can have a shape with like a little socket that a chemical signal would show up, and that chemical signal would then plug into the protein. Well, the relevance about this is very important in this regard. When a signal binds to a complementary protein, meaning the shape of the protein will determine what kind of signals can bind to it. When a protein binds to its complementary signal, an event occurs. Not only did the signal plug into the protein, but the signal has an electrical magnetic charge. Just remember, all atoms are vibrational charges. When the signal binds to a protein, the protein's electrical charge changes because the signal is added to it. When the charge changes, it's the charge that was involved with giving the final shape to the knitted yarn that the protein represents. So when a protein and a signal come together, it causes the knitting structure to change a little bit so that the product changes shape. And so the result is, when a signal binds to a protein, it causes the protein to restructure the knitting and change its shape. And in the process of changing shape, the protein moves. The movement is then used to do work. So by harnessing the movement, you can then generate a function such as digestion, functions such as respiration, as a result of proteins changing shape. So that leads us to what? It says, here's how a cell works. I got protein gears. The protein gears can engage and carry out function, but they will not move until the proteins receive a signal. And then the signal causes the protein to change its charge, which then results in the protein changing its knitting pattern, which means it changes shape. When the shape is changing, it's a movement. And that movement is then used in the assembly of all the gears to cause the gears to move and to create the function. So what is life? Life is a result of a protein machine being engaged by signals. To make the image in your head, I talked about the signals as being molecules, less like drugs or hormones binding to a protein. And the reason they bind is because there's a complementarity in the protein structure to the structure of the physical signal. So it's like a lock and key. They plug together. This is very helpful for us to understand how a signal can bind to a protein and change its shape. But it's also misleading because it suggests that all signals are chemicals. And this is the way biology has actually pursued its research, is that all signals that control biology must be chemical. As a result, we created a whole industry to make new signals and signals to change our system called the pharmaceutical industry. And so the whole field of healthcare is saying, if your biology isn't working right, your gears aren't engaging appropriately. Therefore, if we change the signals in your system, we can change the regulation and functioning of the gears and determine the outcome and take you from a dis-ease state and bring you into a state of health by changing your chemistry. All well and good, except for the fact that's still a Newtonian belief, because we have to add the nature of quantum mechanics. And the quantum mechanics says this: does the energy have to be a physical signal? As I mentioned from the work of Maclare, it turns out, in fact, the invisible energy signals, the ones that are waves that are not identifiable as focused chemicals, the waves that are running through the environment, are 100 times more effective in signaling proteins than are the actual chemical signals. So the interesting fact is this: the proteins provide for the gears, their movement provides for life, the protein movements are driven by the binding of signals, and the signals can be either of two kinds: the chemical signals, which we're very familiar with, or the energy signals, which turn out to be more effective. And it's interesting because the energy signals are the medium through which mostly complementary medicine is mediated, by changing the energy of the field. The ancient Chinese and Asian medicine is totally based on dealing with energy fields, not dealing with chemical fields. So the significance is that the quantum physics is actually bringing us in alignment with the same kind of Asian medicine that deals with the kinds of meridians and acupuncture points and all those kinds of issues dealing with humors inside the human body as controlling life. And so the new physics brings Asian medicine and Western medicine together and allows their philosophies to be understood, as Western medicine always trying to deal with the physical component and Eastern medicine trying to change the energy component. The interesting effect, though, is which would be a more powerful one, or which would be the more appropriate one to manipulate. And that's when you'd go back to quantum physics, which is the mechanics of the universe, the quantum mechanics, which says that the energy signals are 100 times more effective than chemical signals, number one. But number two, as Einstein reported, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle, which says that it's more effective to change the particle, the body, using energy fields than it would be to change it with chemistry itself. So it's interesting that we bring the physics now back into the biology here, of recognizing how does biology work. Signals bind to proteins, change their shape, and the shape changes provide for the behaviors that we discuss in human physiology textbooks, such as respiration, digestion, etc. So now we have this interesting little relationship. We have two things that interact to create behavior. The two things are the proteins and the signals. And when the two come together, then the protein moves and generates the function. If the function that we're looking at isn't working right, so we have a dysfunction, which is usually manifest as a dis-ease in our physiology, then I ask a simple question. If you're expressing a dysfunction or a dis-ease, what can you attribute directly? What can you attribute that disease to? Well, I back up and say, well, wait, there were only two things we talked about. Proteins, which are the structure that move and create the function, and the signals that engage the protein. So if I said the signal plus protein equals behavior, and we say from observation the behavior is not functioning, the behavior is in a state of dis-ease, then I'd have to say, well, what could be responsible for the disease? Of course, you look on the other side of the equation from behavior and you only have two things. You have proteins plus signal. Well, then I'd have to say, well, then a disease that we express is probably either due to the proteins not being right or the signals not being right. Well, true. It's one of those two things that is off. Now the question is this. How can the protein be off? And the answer is the protein is a piece of knitted machinery, a single thread of protein yarn that folds into a pattern, that the sequence of amino acids determines the pattern, that the gene, the bases A, T, C, and G down the length of the gene are actually the blueprint to tell me which amino acid comes after which amino acid in my poppet B chain of protein. Well, if I have a mutation in my DNA, that means I change or alter that genetic code, the A, T, C's, and G's. But those are the letters that program which of the amino acids are following in the sequence of the protein. So if a gene is mutated, that means the piece of yarn, the protein yarn that is finally assembled by that gene, is going to have an instruction, an amino acid that may be the wrong one because of the result of the mutation, but the amino acid is part of the guide for knitting the final structure. So the result is this. When I get a DNA mutation, I cause the knitting pattern to be distorted, so the final shape of my protein is going to not be exactly right. And as a result, a gene mutation can lead to a dysfunctional protein that will not engage with the machine appropriately, and then the behavior will be inappropriate or off, and then we would get a disease. So yes, genes that are defective can cause protein machinery to be built incorrectly and as a result not function appropriately and lead to disease. Now here's the catch. A small, very small percentage of people actually have genetic defects that can cause a disease. In fact, it's far less than 5%. That means 95% of us arrived on this planet with a genome, genes, that were capable of providing us with a healthy, prosperous, happy existence on this planet. If you are part of that very small percent that got here with a gene defect, we refer to those as birth defects. And that's not the end, because through new understandings, we can circumvent those problems either through chemistry and drugs, which is what the medical industry is working on, or through energy healings and through the mind, which we're going to elaborate on a little bit further. But the relevance about this is simply this. Behavior is due to protein plus signal. Disease means the behavior is off. If the behavior is off, then it's either due to the proteins or the signal. Where right now we find that less than 5% of the people can really claim that any disease they express is really due to protein defects, because that is the number of the percent, less than 5% of the people that arrived here with defects that impact their normal biology. Well, that leads us with 95% or more of the people on this planet that arrived here with a perfectly usable genome. If these people start to have a dis-ease or their behavior is not supporting them, and I look at the equation and I say, well, there was only two things. It's the protein or the signal. And I recognize, well, 95% of the people, they can't claim the protein is a problem because their proteins were quite usable. Their genes were good. Then all of a sudden you realize, my God, 95% of the population, if they're failing in health, it's not the genes and the proteins, it's something wrong with the signal. And that's where the source of our illnesses and our dysfunctions arise from in the greater majority of cases by far. Essentially, as I said, 95% of the people, their issues are derived from the signals that are off. Now, all of a sudden, I say, okay, wait, the proteins are working good, and I'm getting a disease, and my signals are off. Then you could say, well, how can the signals be off? What could cause the signals to be off? Well, there are three things that essentially can contribute to our, these are three fundamental defects in signaling that can result in a disease. Number one is trauma. For example, if you're walking and you step off the curb and you fall and you land and you wrench your back, the nervous system's job was to send signals from the brain to the tissue and organize the biology where the proteins are. If I mess up my nervous system, then I've physically impaired the process of getting a signal from my brain to my proteins. And as a result, I distort the flow of information, and a distortion there leads to a distortion of protein functions, which are then manifest as a disease or dysfunction. So trauma can provide for an interference with the propagation of the signal. Okay? Number two, toxins. Meaning this, that we do have a physical system for propagating information. It's called the nervous system. It's built out of cells and molecules, and it propagates signals from the brain and sends signals down to the tissues, and also receives information from the tissues that is sent back up to the brain, and the brain coordinates that information. If by some chance I pollute the system and put in chemicals that interfere with the propagation of the signal, such as toxins, then I've interfered with the signal getting to the target, the protein, and as a result have interfered with the function of the protein, which then is manifest as a disease or dysfunction. So the first one is trauma. I physically interfere by distorting the pathway through an accident. The second one is I physically distort the pathway by infiltrating it with toxic components, chemicals that shouldn't be in there. And the third one is the most important one, because it is the predominant source of control, is the mind. And here's where this comes into play. There is absolutely nothing wrong with sending the signals from the brain to the cells. What's wrong is that sometimes the wrong signals are sent at a time that it'd be inappropriate to express those behaviors, and as a result, I'm engaging behaviors that are out of sync with the world that I'm living in or out of sync with the needs that I must be accomplishing at that particular time. So basically, it says the third one, the mind, interferes with the system. Not that there's anything physically wrong with biology. It's just sending the wrong information at inappropriate times, and that results in functions that are out of order or out of balance, and that leads to dysfunctions and diseases. So basically, it says then we really want to understand the nature of the propagation of these signals, because in 95% of the people, they actually arrived on this planet with protein mechanism that would provide for a very healthy, happy life. And therefore, rather than focusing on the genes and the chemistry, which is the myopic focus point of conventional allopathic medicine, the new physics and the new study of control reveals that we should be focusing on the signals, which include both the physical signals and the energetic signals, which include thought. So the nature of how a signal gets to the protein is then our next focus of discussion, because this mechanism is the mechanism that provides for the engagement of behavior. And when done appropriately, presumably that would lead to our thriving. And when our behaviors are inappropriate or out of harmony with the environment, it will actually cause us to express a disease and enough to actually kill us. So I think it's important for us to recognize the role of these signals and how they actually work in the cell.
This concludes Session 2 of The Wisdom of Your Cells. Our program continues with Session 3, The Complexity of Wholeness.